On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! This is live. Yes, this is the ninth day of May, 2014. It is a minute past the hour. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That is where you'll find a selection of the day's news stories for your perusal. It is also where you will find access to the chat room. Folks wandering by even now as we speak. Jug of Punch having joined in. Richard's there. Sergi's in the room. Sparky's with us, of course. And Will from Chicago is there, and all within a minute of airtime, more folks will more likely than not be wandering by. I'm there too. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and this, yeah, Friday, it is Friday on the front porch. I was gone yesterday, and while being gone, I was, you know, kind of scared. Chest pains are icky, but the good news is, having been subjected to a battery of tests and apparently the death panel not being able to meet on days that are numbered 8 or something, or in months that end in Y, who can possibly understand? No, I was tested, retested. I repeatedly had my skin punctured and blood drawn. I was starved. Subjected to periodic reawakenings all through the night. So if it happens that at some point in time, especially that you just hear me, well, you'll know I've kind of faded away because, well, not a lot of sleep. I went to the hospital yesterday because for about 4 years now, I've had these really, really bizarre onsets of pain that I did not understand, and they had become creepier and creepier and creepier. And so a really creepy one rolled along yesterday, and I'd had a really creepy one the night before that, too. So I decided, you know what, let's go find out what it is. And for the first time in a very long time, I was able to go to the hospital because I did not have to contemplate some crippling $15,000 pay-it-now-in-cash bill. Because Obamacare. So I went. And I was well-treated. And they followed, you know, all the rules by the book, you know. Didn't take my belt and shoelaces, but anyway. So I had a stress test this morning, or a stretch test, as we call them here in the hills and hollers. I had a stress test. They put some radioactive isotope in your veins, and then they take pictures of your heart and your circulatory system, and then they put you on a treadmill and work your butt off. And so working my butt off comes to something like 150 beats per minute, blood pressure 180 over 80, and huffing and puffing like I was auditioning for the road company of the Three Little Pigs. And nothing happened, which is a good thing. So they turned me loose, telling me there was absolutely no sign of any heart problems, but at the same time saying, you know, we don't know what those things you're having are. I said, well, okay, You don't think, okay, if it's not going to kill me, you know, that which does not kill us may, whatever. So I'm home. And I hated being gone last night, but I was tickled pink to be back here this evening. Because, well, this is a whole lot of my existence revolves around this 10-year-long ongoing conversation. And when we're not having it, I feel, and it's not pleasant. Along the way, I learned a lot. Of course, there are televisions in the rooms, even here in West Virginia. Had a really, really nice roommate. We had some good conversations. And at one point along the way, I heard, because it's that time of year, the West Virginia Democratic and Republican primaries will be held this Tuesday. I've already voted. And I forget what the woman's name was, but she was obviously some Koch brothers-funded teabagger type who had a stirring political ad with the appropriately martial music and some voiceover announcer saying, "And Kathy Crapcranium will go to Washington, D.C. and fight against Obama. Obamacare." And I'm sitting there, and they've been pulling enzymes, and all my enzymes were clean. Nothing ever elevated. Nothing. EKGs were great. But the telemetry never beeped. But sitting there, and understanding that I was sitting there, hoping to find out what was going on, or at least, I was in the right place if something was going to go sideways. And I'm hearing some good-for-nothing, God-forsaken, soulless, motherless, booger-munching, libertarian, Ayn Randian, Republican, Bircher, Deather, Tenther, talking about how she's going to go and fight to make sure that, by God, my Obamacare goes away. And I took it personally. It felt like she was saying, "I'll go to Washington and see if we can't kill you." And it caused me to sort of contemplate who that ad resonates with in this state. "Yeah, by God, there's too many sick people in our hospital. Not enough people dying around here, as far as I'm concerned.
There's not a lot to do in a hospital room, so I got busy writing. It'll probably go up at the Horn site sometime in the fairly near future, my reflections on, "She'll go to Washington and fight against Obamacare." I made a point of saying on a number of occasions, "I sure am glad I'm here because I'm having these pains and I've got Obamacare now. And otherwise, if it was a heart attack, I would have stayed home and died." Because you see, that's what it means. The Medicaid expansion, and to a certain extent, Obamacare as well. The for-profit portion, it's all Obamacare. But the whole thing was designed to reduce the number of people who are dying in this country every year, not for want of access to medical care, but for want of access to some form of health insurance. That's what it's about. So, yeah, I took it personally. Because they mean it personally. When a Republican says he or she is going to fight against Obamacare, what they're saying is they're going to fight against you. They're going to fight against your continued ability to go to the doctor when you're sick. They're going to fight against your ability to recover from treatable disease. They're going to fight against your hopes of surviving catastrophic illness. That's who they're fighting against. They're not fighting for America. They are fighting against you and me and people we love, people we don't know, people we care about, American citizens. These are people who are levying war against the United States of America in the form of trying to make sure that sick people can't see the doctor. And for that, I hate them. And I don't haul that word out and put a lot of work behind it very often. But I do. I loathe them. I despise them. Because I consider them the worst, filthiest, most lower than a snake's belly in a wagon rut kind of anti-American scum. But that's just me. But everything worked out, and we'll probably do some follow-up work. It's these weird-ass pains really do, wherever they're coming from, it would be good to find out, because I don't think the human body is supposed to feel what I'm feeling from time to time. Anyway, so they brought me the low-carb, no-salt, and that salt substitute that comes in the no-salt, on the no-salt tray, I think that's the grit that they use for medium grit sandpaper. But I was starving, and I ate it joyously. I ate it with relish. No, they wouldn't let me have any relish. It's got salt in it. Lunch today, and let's see, I ate at 6 o'clock yesterday and ate at 1:30 this afternoon. Had to be NPO, Nihil Peros, for the stretch test. And I was ready to start gnawing on the furniture by the time the lunch tray came. And I got through it. It was nothing wonderful. But they brought me, and God only knows why I do these things. There probably really is a pill to help me with this part. So there's one of those little plastic institutional cups of apple juice. And because I was raised to read labels. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. I read the label to my apple juice. Ocean Spray. At Ocean Spray INC, by the way, on Twitter. And for some reason or another, because I wanted to check to see if it was actually apple juice or apple juice cocktail drink juice beverage liquid. But no, it said 100% apple juice. So I'm thinking, okay, I can drink this. And then I just keep reading around the little circle that runs around the foil top. And I see this line, and I really would. I need some international input on this. I see this little line that says contains 100% juice from apple juice concentrate, period. For country of origin, see time and date stamp on side of package. Okay, will do. And thus, I picked up the little juice cup box thing. And there it was. Lo and behold, 1-3-SEP-1-4, C-7-1-4-0, 14-0-6-D, that's the first line, and then the word China. As in country of origin for my apple juice, China. And while I should not have been, I was surprised. And people who know the healthcare system better than I can probably answer this, because I don't have an answer for it, because I've never seen country of origin, China, on a jug of apple juice at the grocery store. Of course, I've never seen country of origin China on a frozen turkey either, but that's partly why Wally World won't tell you where their turkeys come from, because they come from, yeah. And this is not me gooning on China. This is far more a critique of what has been done to that land. I will not soon forget the scientist who told me a few months ago that the largest thing that he saw in the wild during his visits to China just a very few short years ago was a sparrow. Just a small bird. The larger fauna are mostly gone, having been eaten, among other things, among other times during the Cultural Revolution. Eaten to extinction. Rats, birds, cats, dogs. And we know, of course, that China is burning untold, ungodly amounts, all that it can possibly import into the country, of coal from places like Australia and Appalachia. We know they'd like to have more. We know that there are, for instance, predators in Alaska, one of whom is the owner of an environmental award-winning resort complex in Utah called Snowbird, who would like to turn the Chewitna River in Alaska into a giant open-pit strip mine. Because they just can't get their hands on enough coal to run the capitalist miracle that has been established over there by us in conjunction with the ruling oligarchic families of the people, so-called People's so-called Republic. And so we know what the skies are like. We know what happens when there is massive, unconstrained burning of coal. Everybody who listens to this program knows about ultrafine particulates. Everybody who listens to this program knows about polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. We know what they do to the air and the soil and the water. Everybody who listens to this program knows about the fallout of mercury that comes from the burning of coal and lands in lakes and rivers and streams and oceans. And all those things land on other things sticking up above the ground and above the water before they get to the ground or the water, some of which one presumes would be apple trees. So that's immediately where my mind went when I saw country of origin, ocean spray apple juice, China. Suddenly, it's a question of toxic, poisonous apples, and we're not talking about a Walt Disney cartoon here either. And because it's China, and because money, you're not going to see a lot of rigorous testing going on of said apples. Hey, wash them off! Wash them off, put them in the vat, crush them, cook them, do whatever you got to do. We got hospitals to send apple juice to over there. So I won't be buying any ocean spray anything for a very, very, very long time. Country of origin, China. For all I know, they've used Chinese cranberries and Chinese apples and Chinese grapes and Chinese pears. But then after you get past the toxic part, there's the larger... Okay, thank you. Texas T in the chat room noting 70% of Chinese farmland is polluted. Hey, bring me an apple. Don't. But that's the one leg of this little sawhorse. The other is the question is a question of economy and scale and what sovereign viability, and it goes back to, and I've referenced this before, the movie is terrible, it's corny, it is historically inaccurate, but Robert Shaw as the Panzer colonel in the Battle of the Bulge, opening a captured package from stateside to some American GI, and he looks at his chief of staff and he says, "Manfred, what is that?" "That's right, that is chocolate cake. They are mailing chocolate cake across the Atlantic. If they can mail chocolate cake, then we know we are doomed." Because once upon a time we did that. The war effort in the Second World War included sending cookies across the ocean to our soldiers. It was a little manifestation of both will and power. Now, and because my mind works the way my mind does, when I saw country of origin, China, I thought, wait a minute, what about the bushels upon bushels upon kilobushels upon megabushels of apples that are produced in that wonderland of the Northwest, the apple-growing area of Washington State? What about the beautiful, magnificent apple groves of western North Carolina? What about the apple groves of West Virginia and Virginia? What about the apple groves that were seeded by one John Chapman as he went down the Ohio River, got off the Ohio River at Marietta, and struck westward, planting groves of apple trees that would be tended by the yeoman farmers moving west? What about all that? Why can't Ocean Spray, and that's about as wholesome a brand as you're likely to find, why can't Ocean Spray produce all of its apples from American apples? This coming in from Michael. Oh, my God. Subject line, eye juice. "But, Bob, everyone knows Apple products are made in China." Oh, I never even made the connection. I'm almost ashamed. That's beautiful. That's just beautiful. And early toaster-worthy commentary. Thank you, Michael. But is this just because of globalization? Is this because it's good for the world for us to have our apple juice? Our apple juice has to come from China? I mean, is this because they get their pork from us? Of course, they have that ongoing problem where you might buy something labeled goat that turns out to be rat. I don't have a piece of goat without so much rat in it. Honest to God, really, we're flying apple juice across the, or, no, we're not flying it. We're sailing it. We're freightering it across the Pacific Ocean. To what end? Are the apple growers of Washington and points elsewhere simply so bought up and so covered up and making so much money that it's no longer profitable to them to sell apples for juice to whoever it is that produces apple juice for Ocean Spray? Straight up, I don't know the answer. But I know it gives me a queasy sense of dis-ease to think about a country that is no longer capable of producing its own apple juice. I mean, okay, pineapple juice, they only grow in, like, Hawaii, so maybe we need to bring in some pineapple juice from Asian, South Pacific countries. Fine. Polynesian countries. Oh, fine. There's only one state in the union that can grow coffee, so necessarily we're going to have to import our coffee. Okay, bananas too. But really? Apples? And what about peaches? Plums? Now, apparently we do produce our own pistachios now, and we do a damn fine job of it. Bee colonies are worked to death pollinating almond trees. Oh, maybe that's the answer. Note coming in from Dr. John. Chinese apple pickers make $2 per day. U.S. apple pickers make $12 per hour. So what? One wonders how that would translate to the price of a jug of apple juice. You know, say a gallon. And once again, we find ourselves back at the eternal struggle between Tina and Lois. Tina being the globalist answer, there is no alternative. Lois being locally owned, independently sourced. That, too, is a possibility. Jack in Shreveport pointing out, Bob, you may have said this, but them U.S. apples might be for eating. Them China ones might be for juicing. Well, and that's, there's nothing new in that, because I mentioned John Chapman, Johnny Appleseed, a little bit earlier. Every piece of root stock that he took with him and planted in the American Midwest, and some of his groves survive to this day. There was not an apple that came off one, not one of those trees that you could just bite into and say, an apple. Because they were sour as hell, and the only thing, I mean, you couldn't make a pie, you couldn't eat one, nothing. The only thing they were good for was pressing into cider and fermenting, because the Bible didn't say nothing about drinking no cider. And so the fine, upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing Christians who settled the American Midwest got drunker than Adam's off ox on those cider apples. Irish Dave pointing out, as American as apple pie, has motherhood been outsourced yet? No, they're working on it, though. As follow-up to his apple-picking comment, Dr. John points out, get a hold of Where Am I Eating? By Kelsey Timmerman, source of that apple factoid I just sent. Great exercise in tracking foods, meeting the workers, and so forth. Highly recommended. If you're keeping notes at home, and why aren't you? Where Am I Eating? Kelsey Timmerman, T-I-M-M-E-R-M-A-N, K-E-L-S-E-Y. Where Am I Eating? By Kelsey Timmerman. I got to get my hands on that. Although I say that with no small amount of trepidation, because God only knows how many foods I will then become afraid of. And see, that's one of the conundrums that attaches, for instance, to our lives here in Central Appalachia. Because a person who doesn't want to drink Chinese apple juice, and it has no, and again, I reiterate, it has nothing to do with the character of folks who live in China. I admire them. I admire the culture that has sustained them for a time that goes way back to when us Western Europeans were still scrapping with the buzzards over what the bears didn't want, or the wolves. But that land has been poisoned. By, of course, capitalism. Thank you, Irish Dave. Irish Dave says, I missed the start of the program. You're sounding fine. Live long and prosper. Live long and prosper, Irish Dave. And thus do we find ourselves at 30 minutes past the first hour of the program, engaging in our first Star Trek reference of the evening. the obligatory Star Trek reference. But I do. I wonder. But what I was getting at. So the response to that. What did I say? Tina versus Lois. There is no alternative versus locally owned, independently sourced. In many parts of the country, the best way to respond to "I don't ever want to drink potentially toxic Chinese apple juice" is to go out and plant some apple trees. The Golden Delicious, for instance, that is admired by so many people, originated in Clay County, West Virginia. Yeah. Worried about the tomatoes? Tired of eating those little hard tomato-shaped baseballs from the grocery store that doesn't matter how long you let them ripen on your windowsill, they're never going to be fit to eat? Oh, you grow your own tomatoes. Worried about eating maybe Franken spuds that you plant your own potatoes. But no, not here at least. Maybe there are other places you can. I'm sure there are. But one of the aspects of Central Appalachian culture, in fact, I would argue the defining aspect of Central Appalachian culture, to wit, our desire to be almost as nearly self-sufficient as humanly possible, by dint of both necessity and after necessity, sort of prideful choice. Well, that's been taken from us. Because we know. I mean, there's been actual, real-world, hardcore, scientific testing, and we know that in the areas where mountaintop removal is practiced in West Virginia, you plant a garden at your own peril. And things that we love that grow wild in the woods, like the little morel mushrooms that are referred to around here as molly moochers. Fungi. Mushroom walks into a bar. Bartender says, "Hey, we don't serve your kind here." Mushroom looks at him and says, "Why not? I'm a fungi." The little mushrooms that grow in the woods that we love so much around here, you know, you soak the morels, the molly moochers for a little bit. You make sure all the little spiders and creepy things get out of it. And you drain them and rinse them again in cold water, and then you dry them off and you pat them, and you roll them in flour, and you just fry them in butter. Says the guy who was worried about a heart attack. Yes, I know. God, they're good. Nothing more than a little salt and pepper. And they're heaven. Well, they are particularly efficient at a sort of natural bioremediation. Yeah, you're right, Devin. The photo does say China, and then it says CA. What else does it say? Because it's kind of like buying meat at Walmart, where the label on the meat says, "may come from the following countries." It says China, CA, CRV. And I don't think that stands for Coal River Valley. Crovania? I don't know. China, C-A, C-R-V, all caps. But anyway, so the little mushrooms are good at pulling up the poisons out of the soil, so we don't dare eat them because that soil is poison as hell. Polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, ultrafine particulate toxins. And remember, an ultrafine is as small as a virus, so that can be uptaken through a root structure. Nice, huh? So that's been taken from us. Ramps, we love to dig ramps. I haven't eaten a ramp since I learned about the soil toxification of this state. And I miss them. ramps and beans, ramps and potatoes, ramps and eggs. And my particular favorite, take your favorite creamy leek soup recipe, substitute the ramps for the leeks only by about a tenth as much. Heavenly. But that's gone for us. Consider the amount of water that goes into a cucumber or a crookneck yellow squash, or if you're brave enough to plant them, you know, oh, I planted four hills of zucchinis. Oh, God, the whole county will have zucchini. Yeah, we're going to make some zucchini bread. That's what the zucchini growers always say. Oh, sure, Devin. Just eat it. We're already effed. Yeah, the condemned ate heartily, right? Do you begin to get a sense for what it's like to live inside my skull? Something as ordinary, dare we say prosaic, as an institutional little mini cup of apple juice sends me on flights of speculation and concern about the global food supply. And while we're at it, let's think about that $2, the human dignity of that $2 a day apple picker somewhere that they grow apples in China. Yeah, me either. And then try to think about getting American people to, hey, look, here's your, okay, you can roll the biochemical dice and drink the cheap Chinese apple juice, or you can have American apples from an American apple juice that might cost you 50 cents more a half gallon. Which one? Well, I want the Chinese. You doubt it? An observation coming from Robert in Australia. Subject line, garlic. I used to love cooking with garlic until our highly competitive duopoly of supermarket chains started importing all their garlic from Argentina. And see, that's Australia. And it leads you to conclude, I mean, really, there's not a little corner somewhere in one of the green Australian states where enough garlic can be grown for the Australian people? No. Robert continues, open. Devin. We be 6 foot semi-sentient bipedal tumors. Yeah, we're just walking truffles. Waiting for the pigs. Robert continues, open Google Earth to get an idea of the distance between Argentina and the east coast of Australia. Picked, packed, trucked to airport, flown to Australia, trucked to supermarket, unpacked. I'm betting it comes on a boat, although I don't know. Because, you know, you leave it alone in the house too long, it's going to start sprouting the little green. Yeah. The garlic they were selling got more air miles in one trip than I had in my whole life. And the garlic they were selling, while not exactly cheap, was dry, bland, and tasteless. So, you sure those weren't tomatoes, Robert? And Robert continues, I've moved to a new location 2 years ago with a small independent fruit shop that sells locally produced garlic. It was pretty good stuff. Sadly, here in Australia, we hear regularly of farmers plowing under their fruit trees because the highly competitive duopoly of supermarket chains prefer to buy from overseas. Even the juice manufacturers ship in a great quantity of pulped material from overseas. It's a form of insanity. But hey, money. And thus does Robert find the ultimate thesis. All questions. Because money. Kate asking a question. She's glad your tests are good. Thanks for the update. Question about your roomie. Did you use all the opportunities to educate him without raising his blood pressure? Come on. Is that question really necessary? You know I did. Hell, like I said, the I'm going to Washington to fight Obamacare thing set me off, and I wrote a you know, few hundred words on that last night. It will be appearing on the website or somewhere sometime soon. I'm not sure if I'm happy with it yet. But yes, I did missionary work on my, and he was in pretty tough shape, but we were conversing. And we got to talking about what's been done to this state, and I found out that over near where he lives, and talking to a hillbilly about where he's from, imagine if you were talking to a New Yorker and you said, you know, where are you from, and the person says Brooklyn, and yeah, what part, and they tell you what neighborhood and what street, and pretty soon you're down to what block, and well, maybe you know. Well, it's like that in West Virginia, only it's where are you from, and you get a strange little name, and you find out what holler this man's people have been in for eight generations. People talk about things in hospitals that you wouldn't ordinarily expect. Perfect strangers. Sitting there waiting for the second part of my picture taking after the treadmill part of the stress test. I sat there with a man who told me and managed to keep his composure about how his 26-year-old young son who was a volunteer firefighter, had burned up in a fire because the firefighter protection gear didn't work because money. And so it was that when the gentleman with whom I was sharing a room told me where he was from, he says, yeah, they put in one of them fracking wells right next to our water supply. He says, I reckon our water ain't fit to drink anymore. And if it is, it won't be for much longer. I looked at him and I said, you got a lot of sick neighbors? He says, we all sick. I said, ever wonder why? He said, I don't have to wonder much. He said, they don't care who they hurt and who they poison and who they kill, as long as they make a dollar. He got it. He was 6 years older than me. And he got it. But ain't nobody up his holler gonna march down to the Capitol and demand to be heard, because, you know, after all, there was a public hearing about the frack well, and the fracking company came along and said, everything's going to be all right. Everybody said, all right, you know, I'm a man of my word. Y'all are good for your word, so you wouldn't lie to it. Oh, no. See, you get a sense for what that was like. You go to these little rural hospitals, and if you pay attention and engage in a little bit of conversation, one of the things you'll find out is that there's a lot of people there on staff who absolutely despise their patients. Because there is a horrible, horrible drug problem. And so people in desperation try to, I guess, come up with phony baloney diagnoses in order to get pain pills. Because the damn things are more liquid than cash in this state, in this region. And you get the sense that some of them don't much care for their patients because, well, they've been watching a little too much Bill O'Reilly. been listening to Louie Gohmert a little bit too much. Came very close to thinking I was about to be told about the buggy full of Alaskan king crab legs, but managed to sort of deflect that. Bear in mind, this little local hospital would probably collapse without Medicaid and without the vast amounts of money that are going to be brought into it by Medicaid expansion via Obamacare. That hospital's ability to write checks to people. And you know what? I had extremely professional treatment by people who were very, very nice. And I don't want to leave any other impression than that. They were wonderful. They were caring. But that's my little adventure. Where it goes from here, I don't know. Maybe we'll set up sometime, maybe in June or July, a catheterization just to go in and double check. But the symptoms are bizarre. And the guy who was treating me said, I have never had anybody describe anything to me that sounded even remotely like what you're describing to me. Well, naturally, I have to be unique now, don't I? Yeah, I suspect as much. Steve with a note, subject line, New York. Bob, New York is not a city. It is a collection of neighborhoods, much as we have towns in Ohio and West Virginia and so forth. I remember long, long ago reading John Irving's The World According to Garp, which I began reading and refused to stop reading until it was ended because I was absolutely convinced that at some point in time something was going to happen in that book, but it never did. Not a big John Irving fan. But he does make... he does make an observation in The World According to Garp that even New York is a small town. Because, as Steve notes, small towns are essentially, the biggest cities are agglomerations of littler communities and little neighborhoods. So it's about 12 minutes before the hour, and like I said, it's Friday on the front porch. So we will be getting the gang together in fairly short order, I hope. I want to send out thanks this evening to Sal and to Jug-a-Punch and to Judy for getting us started on fundraising this evening. I haven't mentioned what the fundraising goal is because, frankly, I don't know. When last I checked, we had managed to meet and to somewhat exceed Darlene's $100 challenge. Thank you very much, Darlene, for that. And just this evening during program time, Sal and Judy and Jug-a-Punch have all kicked into the tune of $40. And that's ever so important in the grand scheme of things. Thank you very much this morning qualifies as this morning or last night, because in lieu of flowers or candy, Thomas reached out and helped, as did Sal. Thank you very much to Lauren, who helped out immensely. Thank you, one and all. And so can we say that we need to reach about $110 this evening just to sort of keep up with the general $150 a night fundraising goal? You know, that's an open question, Irish Dave. So does Louis the Grommets. I can never read that. Yeah, Louis Grommet. Does Louis the Grommet's asparagus come from China also, too? We are all holler men now, my friend. Though hoots are real exceptional. Was Garp's daddy really Johnny who got his gun? I had no idea. Very long time ago. I've been trying to forget that book for a long time. And the John Irving fans can now send hate mail. No, I did not. Irish Dave asking, come on, Bob, did you want to contact the death panel for some of your fellow patients? No, no. I did learn something interesting, though, after they fired me up with the radioactive isotopes. It wasn't a dye, so there was no allergic reaction issue. But I did find out that if, say, this was taking place somewhere near the Canadian border, that if they were to turn me loose and I was to go across the Canadian border for, say, lunch, I would not be allowed back into the United States because I would set off all the Transportation Security Administration the Geiger counters. A reminder that this is Friday on the Front Porch for this, the 9th day of May, 2014. And that means a roundtable discussion of all and sundry as it may come to your mind. You can, of course, get in on the Skype side of things. The Skype Horn Malloy chat group is maintained and moderated by Sparky, who is also a longtime moderator in the chat room. He's putting up the bat signal now. Join in, by all means. If you have never been in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, you can establish contact by sending a contact request to Sparky Dunk, Sparkydunc, Sparky Dunk, over on Skype. And if you want to join in on the traditional telephone side, you can dial 304-658-3333. And we've got three slots open, so act now. Operators are standing by. They just can't talk to you because they're me, and I just push a button and don't know you. So first three folks in will fill up the next three slots in the traditional telephone lineup portion of the Friday on the Front Porch conversation. We're down to two lines open. By the way, I'm proud to note that the internet seems to be holding fairly steady. That's a good thing. I think we finally got through to the Shentel people, and they understood that this is a real, real problem. Ha ha ha, Jugapunch. Bob, you're already radioactive. You have a podcast. You guys are irrepressible. All right, yes, one slot remains open in the telephone side of Friday on the Front Porch. And we'll take a little break and let things get all pulled together and pressed down and shaken together. There are no off topics this evening. Bring what you want to talk about. Do please remember that we have done a good job so far of successfully having that guy free radio for quite some time now, and it would be kind of fun to keep it that way. Okay? Yeah. By that guy, I mean, you know, the little Austrian. Oh, let's see. All right, that means four lines are full on the phone side. And we'll take a break and come back with Friday on the Front Porch Conversation. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
She had fever all day and chills at night. Now things got worse, there's a serious fine. In times like this, it takes a man to start like you not often find. A doctor of the heart and a doctor of the mind. If you like a country with a
absolutely one of my Desert Island albums from Waiting for Columbus. Little Feat and the inimitable voice of Lowell George and Rock and Roll Doctor. Okay, let's see. Let's get Friday on the Front Porch started. Welcome to the program.
Good evening, sir.
Hey, Bill, how are you?
Relative to what?
I understand.
Okay. Hey, what you were talking about tonight, about the, I've been through enough of those There ain't nothing like watching that wire move through your artery, buddy. I'll tell you that.
Well, I haven't done that yet.
Were you up around 50, Bob?
51.
Well, that's the year I had a heart attack, Bob.
Thanks a million, Bill.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, well,
I've been telling you I had a smoker, too.
I'm sorry you had yours at all. I mean, no, I'm not as heavy as, not as I once was.
It could be worse.
Thanks to the generosity of the one and only Jay Cruzen, I am a vapor now.
I mean, it could have been worse. It croaked my dad when he was 57, so it could have croaked me when I was 51. I was way underweight, but it's the artery that gives you trouble but runs from the chest back to the heart. It's called a smoker's heart attack.
Oh, yeah. Well,
so file that one away. But get on to the next person here. We got
okay. Let's see.
You don't want to hear from this fat bastard. Go ahead.
Let's see. Let's see who else is here to play tonight. Hey, welcome to the program.
And how are you?
Hey, Jim. I'm fine. How about you?
Oh, okay. Glad your tests were okay, and it appears to be you are in working order.
Yeah. And someday we'll figure out just exactly what it is that was scaring the bejesus out of me. Let's see who's on line three. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hey.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, it's okay, so we have Jim 1 and Jim 2.
Yeah. I can't, I learned about my new phone, I just didn't even, it usually had a click in, or a click in and some sort of, yeah, so you got Jim 2.
Yep. Okay. So we got Bill. We got Jim 1. We got Jim 2, and line 4. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello there.
Oh, hey Kevin. What's up?
Hello there.
How are you?
Can you hear me?
I got you.
Hey there. Stress. Fine. Probably a stress. I know I've had that happen a couple times, and that's what they tell me. So. If you have the chance to take the physical as opposed to the medicinal stress test, you took the right one. That medicinal one drives me crazy.
I'll be honest.
You know, a hot tin roof kind of thing.
That's what I didn't understand about it all because, you know, like I do more of it in D.C. than I do here because I'm a better walker there. But I can go for miles on foot in D.C. And being a fat old 51-year-old, you know, I'll get a little huffy and puffy, but at no point am I doing the whole Fred Sanford, you know, this is a big one, Elizabeth. No, that's not happening. Mm-mm. So, you know, we shall see what we see. All right, now we bring on the Horn Malloy Skype chat group.
Good evening, Bob.
Good evening, Sparky. How are you?
Just fine. To answer your question, CRV is California Recycle Value.
Oh, okay. So
you had a little CA on there, too?
Yeah. So country of origin is China, and the container has California Recycle Value.
Yes.
Because there are, you know, because I'm waiting for a tweet back from @OceanSprayInc to say, No, that was a misprint. Those apples came from Chino, California. Would you care to tell us about the vast apple groves of Chino, California?
Not me. I don't know anything. I know nuts. The only thing I know is nuts and olives.
I got a feeling there aren't any vast apple orchards of Chino, California.
And we grow oranges up here, too.
No, I think that really was Chinese apple juice.
It could have been put together in California.
Yeah, maybe that's where it was blended. But I mean, and you know how this works. It's from concentrate. So what they do is they grow the apples, they press the juice, they boil it away and condense out the water and come up with the thick apple juice concentrate. And then they put it in, you know, vast containers, put it on huge container ships, ship it across the Pacific, and reconstitute it somewhere in California. Does that sound about right?
That's probably what happened. I worked on a plant once that did little cups like that, and they have a vacuum former, what they call it, where the sheet of plastic goes over and this thing comes up the size of the cup and sucks the plastic down over it.
Wow. I didn't. I probably need to tune in for an episode of How Stuff Is Made, but I will take your word for it. Also in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group tonight, we have Sergi. Good evening, Sergi.
Good evening, Bob.
How in the world are you?
I'm here.
You know, I was explaining to Ferg the other night the concept, your concept of the donut burger, and he just stared at me in slack-jawed amazement.
Yeah, you ought to try one sometime. Very, 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 very tasty.
Now you don't split the donut, do you?
Sometimes I use two halves of one donut. Sometimes I use two whole donuts.
Yeah. See, I commended him to the two whole donuts method, and he was just gobsmacked.
It's the perfect mix of meaty and sweet, you know. And then you got your cheese and your mayonnaise and your tomato. All the other good stuff. It's just.
And Fritz is with us from far Arkansas. Good evening, Fritz.
Hello. It's been an interesting day here in Arkansas.
Oh, really?
Well, there was a ruling about an hour ago issued from a Arkansas circuit judge that struck down the marriage amendment here in Arkansas, and of course that's probably going to be appealed. But
was it a state court or federal court judge?
State court judge. It's going to have to go through the court of appeals, state court of appeals, and then eventually the Arkansas Supreme Court before it goes through to the U.S. Supreme Court eventually.
Oh, no, traditional family values are under attack in Arkansas. Now, what's this about the politician in Arkansas, Fritz, who has pretty much been outed as a family values anti-abortion candidate who's anti-abortion, and it's the abortion he's providing for? Do I have that right?
Yes, he's a son of one of the state senator, and he's... He's a family values conservative, and of course it's been found out that allegedly he is trying to pay off the ex-wife to have an abortion. So that's a development story.
And he's also a deadbeat dad, correct?
Yes.
Can't beat them Republican family values now, can you?
Yeah, even here in Arkansas, and as they say, the Republicans are Republicans, and so are some of the Democrats.
A lot of them, as a matter of fact. Hi, Blanche Lincoln. Wonder what she's doing with her time these days. Is she a greeter at Walmart yet?
Unfortunately, no. She's a lobbyist.
Why am I not surprised? Maybe she can get Joe Manchin a job as a lobbyist if he gets completely disgusted with the Senate. Horst is with us from the other side of the world. Good evening, Horst, or good morning.
Bob, I believe he had to step out for a moment, but he indicated he will be back.
Very good, and that, of course, is Will. Good evening, Will.
Good evening. Greetings from Northwest Indiana in the shadow of the big city where, in today's odd headline, Mayor Rahm Emanuel is asking for DJs for help in the Put Down the Guns initiatives. Yes, we are beginning to approach the take that one step beyond the outer limits of the Twilight Zone. Please tell me if you see a young girl named Alice pursuing a white rabbit.
Heavily armed?
Alice or the rabbit, or both?
I'd say probably both, you know, because of
probably both.
Freedom.
Yes. Yes, or as I like to say, there are some parts of the greater Chicago area where, quite literally, the casualty rate in the neighborhoods are comparable to Iraq as it is now. And for those who have completely ignored Iraq, Iraq is now at a perhaps a low-grade civil war, if not a lot of internal violence. So I have to ask ourselves, so did Mr. Bush forget the China shop rule?
The Pottery Barn rule?
Pottery Barn rule, yes. Even though I understand Pottery Barn
doesn't have such a rule.
Such a rule. But we broke it, and unfortunately, much of our inner cities are broken. And sadly, so is much of Appalachia and many other regions of the country.
All right, so we have plenty of space in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group for anybody else who wants to wander by. Yeah, I just saw that note that Horst is off checking the stew. That sounds tasty, frankly.
No, that's me.
Oh, that was you checking the stew.
Yes.
I believe Horst was checking the garbage truck, which is a lot less tasty than the stew.
Here. Okay, tell us about the stew. Go ahead. Break my heart. Break my heart, Sparky.
What about it? I just put the thickener in it.
Okay, what are you thicken it with?
Flour.
Oh, okay, flour, cornstarch.
No, just flour.
Is this the neck bone stew?
No, this is butcher shop stew meat.
Yummy.
Right down the road.
Mm-mm-mm. Tasty.
I almost had some roadkill today.
Well, as long as you're getting into the food porn, I had some fried fish and some boiled potatoes, but Tony Satchery's.
You're probably far enough into the season now. You can get new potatoes, can't you, Jim?
Nope,
not yet. Yeah, too bad.
But my roadkill would have been Wile E. Coyote. I missed him by that much.
Yeah, I think I would forego Wile E. He always struck me as kind of stringy and gamey.
The guy came out of nowhere, and I mean, his tail was straight back, and his tail was as long as his body. He was a little stringy. Yeah, he was kind of gamey looking.
Skeevy even?
Yeah, but he was hauling ass.
Not enough.
Headed into a walnut orchard.
I'm sure the Acme truck was just on the other side.
I don't know what was over there, but he was headed there.
Bob, can I ask you a question about what you were speaking briefly about, relating to China, but also here with the tomatoes and stuff? Like, I have some tomato plants growing. I've got like 9, and we're getting soaked, which is great for the tomato plants. And I've got like 7 strawberry plants, 6 from last year, and then, nature still functioning. And now it turns into 7. And I bought it. Actually, I didn't buy it. My sister-in-law bought it as a gift for me to, I guess, keep me occupied. But are those pretty, does anybody in the group know, are those halfway decent as opposed to store-bought tomatoes?
Any tomato is better than a store-bought tomato.
Amen, brother.
Because, see, those store-boughts are all grown down somewhere in South Florida, and they are genetically pre-selected. I don't know that they're GMO, but they're genetically pre-selected, not for flavor, not for color, not for juiciness, but for transportability. So you can pick them, and they're little green baseballs, and you can ship them all over the country, and they'll be vaguely pink when they arrive. You can get them up to full red, but they're never going to taste like a good tomato.
So it's better the DIY, you know, do it yourself, grow them.
Yeah, yeah, with the caveats that attach to growing stuff around here.
Well, I mean, this is north of the lake, so it's, I mean, I'm not sure what kind of fracking is going on here. I don't think any around here yet.
What's going on here isn't necessarily related to fracking. It's related to mountaintop removal, and it's a matter of the verification of the stuff that's in the soil. I mean, it's been found, the polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, you know.
I understand that, but I was relating to here, but it's here, it's just the chemicals, because, I mean, right above the room in New Orleans, it's like one of right around that area is one of the, it's a big, heavy chemical production area and export-import area. And, you know, it's just like the fish I ate earlier a friend of ours caught it, and, you know, it's just like when I told you a couple of weeks ago, I was eating crawfish, and I'm not even sure what came, you know, I mean, it was caught and bought at a reputable place, but even then, I'm wondering about, you know, four or five years ago when Katrina, you know, and they had that oil, and after Katrina, then you had that big oil leak that only lasted, was it 100 days or something like that?
Yeah, only.
Leak, yeah. And leak is, I'm being,
The Gulf is wrecked.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, it's just like okay, tastes good. I'm just gonna.
Well, I mean, that's like one of the things that sort of gets under my skin. I found a little place over in D.C. for when I'm there, where they bring in fresh oysters from real close nearby. And if you go to Oyster Happy Hour, they're 25 cents a piece. So you can go wild pretty cheap on at the raw bar. And
you put ketchup, hot sauce, and with horseradish.
Yeah, they bring you the horseradish and the cocktail sauce and lemon, and this particular joint also makes a beautiful little red wine tarragon vinaigrette with tiny, tiny little pieces of minced shallot in it. Holy mackerel!
Don't slap your brains out.
But now that there's a 17-mile oil slick making its way down the James River, and who knows, maybe it's in the Chesapeake Bay by now. You know, you just grieve for the Chesapeake Bay because of what's been done to it.
See, you're so negative. You got a bright side. That could be a new sensation.
Oh, yeah, a new flavor sensation? Sure.
A new taste sensation. That's what I'm saying. But
now with hydrocarbons.
Yeah.
I mean, after all, they call it light, sweet, crude, right?
Yeah. Always look on the bright side of life, as they say. End of life.
Yeah. All right.
Wasn't the Chesapeake a provider of a lot of different seafoods at one point?
Oh, yes. It was a wonderland. It was magnificent.
Right. They were very.
My memory of, you know, when I was in fifth grade, you know.
Well, when I was there last time, it was soft-shell crab season, which is a very limited duration. And you get monster sandwiches, and they're wonderful, but I don't know.
Well, sad to say, the Chesapeake Bay, parts of the New England coast and the Gulf have been heavily impacted. I think people are getting the idea that what we're doing to our environment and our economy is unsustainable, but I think we're still looking for solutions. I mean, it's incredible to think how pristine things were only a century ago in comparison to where they are now. Mind you, we've made some progress with some environmental regulations, but the companies that pollute are fighting tooth and nail to roll back the clock.
Sure, and there's an attitude that attaches there, Will, of, hey, look at all this water. And you know, the generally speaking, the indigenous peoples who inhabited this continent did not think this way. White folks get over here and they say, look at all this water. Let's dump a bunch of crap in it.
Right. Well, there is a connection among most indigenous peoples throughout the world with the land. Unfortunately, the people who came over to colonize and conquer thought that everything was an infinite resource until they learned it wasn't. And we still have a lot of that attitude prevalent in our culture today. I mean, consider this, Bob. If you were to drop, I don't know, maybe a plastic bag on the National Mall in Washington, and a police officer saw you, you'd be told to pick that up or I'll write you a ticket and you'll have to pay a fine. Whereas companies like Massey Energy can pollute to their heart's content because they don't have to pay the externalities.
My favorite example of that, Will, is the ramp. No, it's ginseng. Ginseng. Ginseng even has a reality show about it now. It's incredibly profitable to go out and dig ginseng. And if you get caught digging ginseng out of season, they will bust your ass and put you under the jail. If, on the other hand, at any time of year whatsoever, you blow the entire mountain up where the ginseng grows, you're a job creator. That's progress.
That's incredible. Yes. Is that you talk about ginseng, the herb, the Chinese herb that also grows over here?
Yeah, it grows prolifically in central Appalachia.
Heck, if you could shut the coal mines down and get sustainable energy, that would actually give people jobs, along with tourism, because that is also another industry. Instead, it's as if our attitude towards the earth that sustains us is that it's a dead thing that we'll just use till it dies. Unfortunately, when the earth dies, so do we.
We'll probably die. The earth will still be here. I mean,
yeah, just our ability to live on it will be.
Our ability to live on it. Yeah, life will continue.
Well, here's another example. Consider what our friends in northern Wisconsin are doing. Sugar maples grow in the Pinoki Hills in wild, abundant, magnificent profusion. And you can make maple syrup from now till doomsday in those forests. And so there is an effort underway for the last two seasons to begin large-scale maple sugar production. To show that
you haven't mentioned that, huh, Bob?
I know. I knew the minute I said it, Bill, that it was going to. Yeah.
But a buddy of mine, a musician, he goes out to the Sheridan, Ohio area, where that was a big thing when I was a kid. Maple syrup. He buys it out there because I'm tired of spending $7 a bottle for some crap in a. Well, it's not crap. It's Canadian. It's good. But it's compared with the, I mean, the Chardon area, lake, not a lake, what the hell county is that? Oh, the hell with it. But that was a common, and they bragged about it when I was in grade school. Now try to find it. There was a big robbery in Canada. Some guy knocked over a tanker truck full of maple syrup. About 4 years ago that happened. That's weird. Don't knock over a bank, steal a bunch of maple syrup. Are you guys still there?
Oh, yeah, we're all here. We're listening.
I don't want to bore you to death, but, yeah, you talk food. Try to find stuff. You know, I like pork roast. I'm German, what the hell can I say? But since you talked to me about a certain group of people buying the Daisy Hill.
Smithfield Meats, yeah.
Oh, Smithfield, yeah.
But Smithfield owns all the other brands, John Morrell, Eckrich, yeah, what have you.
Yep.
But yeah, and by the way, you talking about enjoying pork? I noticed a comment from John in the chat room. He said he has been smoking a pork shoulder for several hours now. So there's going to be a barbecue at John's house.
Oh yeah, yeah. Some friends of mine bought me a electric smoker because, well, when you used to catch steelhead trout, which you could catch in the Grand River, which was 5 minutes from my house, 10 minutes from my house in Lake County, go over there. And I remember one morning in a couple hours, I nailed 3 steelhead. I was so proud of myself, it wasn't funny. Because that's one hobby I enjoyed for some reason, I don't know why. Something I didn't get into until I was past 40 years old. I had to quit chasing young women, so I turned up fishing instead. Because in the case of the fish, they come to you. But the young women, it didn't happen that way after I was 40. It's, what do you want, Grandpa? You know, that kind
right.
of stuff. Another place was down on the Outer Banks. I was down there one year. I could look out the window and see the Wright Brothers Monument. And we fished quite a bit and caught some good fish. But it was the idea of... the places that serve the clear clam chowder, it just knocks you out of your pants, off your seat.
Oh, wow.
I'm used to the white, you know, the white, the New England clam chowder. I can make that at home pretty well.
I've never even heard of the clear stuff.
Yeah, this was a clear broth, almost, and they served it at the, there was a couple of real beat up old fishing docks that had restaurants down there. I forget what they call the Outer Banks. I forget what the island was, but it was the area where you could see the Wright Brothers flowing down there, which we call.
Down around Killdevil Hills, I think.
Yes, sir. Exactly. We're in a food kick tonight.
Just like last week, kind of a food porn show.
Yeah,
because I listened to it afterwards, and we got into it a little bit about food.
I wish somebody would kick in with some of his Ukrainian stuff, because this is, to me, is very potentially dangerous. The way some people are talking in this country. It's like, are they out of their freaking minds?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Antagonize people who have tons of missiles. Go ahead, you stupid.
Well,
I guess maybe you should have lived through the missile crisis, you know?
Well, let's consider 2008. The situation in Georgia was something that John McCain tried to rally around, saying we are all Georgians now, and yet he did not criticize George W. Bush, who failed to put out a single sanction, whereas two independent, quote-unquote, countries were created from part of Georgia, which virtually no one... on the planet, but Russia recognizes. It's just that in this entire Ukrainian mess, it's very hard to find good actors. There's elements of the new Ukrainian government, which I abhor as fascist and extreme right wingers, the Svoboda Party, S-V-O-B-O-D-A. Putin seems to be going on the Milosevic, tributer, where he's trying to unite as many ethnic Russians as possible in a goal probably to rebuild the empire, because he mourns the fall of the Soviet Union. And unfortunately, our State Department has bumbled its way through this, as we have supported different factions, which either were not in our best interest to support or got supplanted. That the protests that began back in November did just legitimate grievances, but now we have a situation in the Ukraine where all it'll take is one bad crash between, let's say, a Russian plane into a U.S. ship in the Black Sea, or some other violent incident that will erupt into full-scale war. I doubt the U.S. will want to get involved, but this is a situation where I see few good actors, few good options. I do believe that diplomacy is the best approach because, as Winston Churchill said,
It's the only approach, Will.
It's the only rational approach because guess what? We cannot see any person who I consider rational urging anything but diplomacy. Dr. Stephen Cohen of Princeton, who's been on a number of progressive shows and programs, has said that there have been proposals by the Russian Foreign Ministry that might serve as a partial starting talking point where everyone ends up getting a little bit of what they want and no one's completely satisfied. In which case, we'll just call that a solution. But unfortunately, there are so many actors in this, and we can't be sure who is whom. I mean, some of the people seizing buildings in the eastern Ukraine are wearing masks, so heaven knows who they are.
Yeah.
Can I interject something that ought to be interesting?
Absolutely.
We all know what June 6, 1944 was. Well, the 70th anniversary is coming up, and Obama and Putin are going to be at Normandy.
Well, that should be very interesting.
Yes. My hope is that we can have some people further down the ladder actually come up with an agreement and the two of them surprise us, because I think Putin realizes this can be a mess for him just as much as Obama realizes this is a mess for him. There are situations where there are no real winners, and I fear this is one of them.
Bob, may I say something, please?
Absolutely.
I think Mr. Putin has all of the assets in his corner, and he will absorb what he wishes to absorb. And that's all there is to it. Period.
Well, Jim, how long has the Ukraine been part of the Russian?
The Russians paid 7 million lives to recapture that whole area in World War II, back of which was yesterday was the celebration of VE Day. And, of course, today it was very much in Red Square. It looked like the old days. The Russian Federation is reasserting itself. It is their territory. It's their sphere of influence. We have no business being there.
I agree. I think you're 100% right. I think you were saying that last week or something like that. And I think this American delusion that everything we do is blessed by God and 100% right,
well, the rest
I think it's starting
world,
to wear off, but it doesn't seem like it yet.
Right. You know, we didn't win World War II in Europe. The Russians won it.
Yeah, it cost them 20 million soldiers.
20 million dead. My God, during the siege of Leningrad, there were 3,000 people dying a day in St. Petersburg today, that beautiful city. And it had been declared by Hitler as a place where no city should exist. And the
cannibalism exists there, Jim?
Yes, there were numerous examples of cannibalism, because a lot of people were walking the streets looking as though they could barely put one foot in front of the other, and yet there were others who appeared to be healthy. And one of the things they discovered apartments in Leningrad at that time where they had killed people.
and these cannibals were immediately shot. I mean, this, if you want to read a good book or listen to a good book, listen to Harrison Salisbury's The 900 Days about the siege of Leningrad, when they were completely cut off except for a minor ice road over Lake Ladoga. And for what? Yeah, it was just, I mean, it to me, St. Petersburg, Leningrad is a hero city.
I and those, that book people,
and those, and those people managed to at least trudge to work the best they could, probably pulling the sleds of their dead children. But still, they were working in factories that had no roof because they'd been bombed out. And, you know, they were able to at least, by the light of a candle, to read a book and read poetry.
I always felt the Russian people during World War II, they had a son of a bitch shooting at them and a son of a bitch behind them ready to shoot at them if they don't shoot enough.
That's what it took.
Tough situation.
That's exactly situation. What it took because, I mean, basically, field commanders, commissars, whomever, I mean, when Hitler initiated Barbarossa against the Soviet Union, he had told his people that this war could not be fought in a knightly fashion, and the commissar order was given. Any Russian political officer was to be shot on the spot. But yet, even though, speaking of the son of a bitch behind him, when the Germans went in there, you had a lot of people who initially supported them. And then,
yeah,
because of the way they behaved and the Einsatzgruppen that came in to... And basically, the thing that bothered a lot of the political Germans, and this was, I'm going back to the Weimar Conference of 1942, was the more territory they absorbed, they had the problem of the Jews. In other words, the number of Jews they had to deal with had almost doubled with the Eastern territories and all in which they held influence in 42 to whenever they were being driven back. But what I'm trying to say is the Germans behaved themselves very badly when they went into that country. And now it has made the Russians very paranoid about any nation flanking their borders. And I don't blame them. They suffered a lot.
Yeah. Their losses were horrendous.
Can we change the subject? We absolutely can. Did you see that article on News of the Weird?
I saw it. I find it.
China miner found alive after 7 years underground.
17 years.
17 years.
Yeah, the first thing that came to mind when I saw that, Duncan, was
the use of what? I'm sorry.
In China, a miner was found alive after 17 years spent underground. Nobody could survive an American coal mine that long. That's the first thing that came to my mind.
You had Russian Jews who lived in a cave for a year and a half, completely sealed up. And how these people survived, I don't know. But there was a news article on television about it and how they had managed to survive. And they were sealed in, period. So I guess people can do what they have to do if...
This man was found alive after being buried in the coal mine by a 7.8 magnitude earthquake.
Jesus Christ.
And some of the ventilation duct remained intact to provide him air.
He must have been awful hungry, I'll tell you.
Well, but see, that's the thing. They actually provided an emergency stash of rice and water. See, we can't do that in the United States because money, because profit, because quarterly profit and loss statements. And that, you know, that would take a big bite out of the year-end bonus for the mine company executives.
Bob, I thought they had these types of areas in which they had certain things stored, like food, water.
Oh, they do. They do. They have so-called safe rooms, but, get to one. I mean, when the lights go out, and, I mean, it's dark. I mean, after I guess it was, I think even before Upper Big Branch, the Aracoma disaster had people talking about, you know, we really need, and they were talking about having secure underground communications networks. And the coal company response was what the coal company response always is. Well, that'll cost us too much money.
God. I shouldn't laugh, but see.
How do they really
The way you put it out there, Bob, is just right out of money.
How do they, but what do they really say about that? Surely they couldn't have said that.
Yes, they said that. That cost too much money.
Is that what they said?
Yes.
That was their official statement.
Yes.
To their public relations.
Yes, it will cost too much money.
Well, of course they said that, because the American people have become sheeple to such an extent that they just think that profits everything.
Yeah, Jim, think like a coal executive, and I realize that one must become to a certain extent psychopathic in order to do that, but think like a coal executive. A coal mine is a finite place. I mean, you might mine coal out of it for 10 years, maybe 15, who knows? But the coal in it is still finite. And the only value in that mine is the coal that you can pull out of it. And so let's say you operate for 10 years and you never have a collapse and you never have an emergency. So that emergency communication system, that secure, hardwired emergency communication system that you put down in the mine, well, that's just sucking up money. And you never even had to use it.
I know, but the thing is, I'm thinking the people who work there who have nothing to say with to a great extent, particularly since they've erased or practically dismissed all unions, but it would seem like the people who, maybe they're just so hard up for work. But, it seems like the people who would be working that would kind of think about that, or are they just so hungry for work?
The latter.
Yeah, absolutely. They're desperate. People are desperate. Because it's the only, I mean, maybe, and Jim, you can tell me, Jim One. I try to paint a fairly accurate portrait of the economy of Southern West Virginia. And maybe I don't paint it well enough, or accurately enough, or starkly enough, or brutally enough. But
well, I think you do a good job.
But you know, there were 100,000 miners in West Virginia in 1980. There are less than 15,000 now, and yet more coal is being moved out of West Virginia than has ever been moved before. Mechanization and mountaintop removal.
Well,
and so people are desperate for work. I mean, really desperate. There is no alternative economy. Maybe you might have a job in a mine service company. That's somebody that goes and services the equipment that's used on the mine site. Maybe you work at McDonald's, or maybe you work at the deli where the miners stop, the gas station deli where the miners stop on the way to the mine and get their bologna sandwiches every morning.
Well, I think Walmart is probably number two after the coal mines.
No, it? Walmart is number one in this state, Jim.
Oh, excuse me. I didn't realize they had achieved such ascendancy.
Oh, years ago.
Oh, I never go there, so I don't know.
You know, on the other hand, however, there are, as I've said before,
on every corner.
There are more florists in West Virginia than there are mountaintop removal workers.
Well, I guess so. Drive down the roads, and you'll see on every road, and every tree, on every bend, a wreath.
Yeah, where somebody's lost it in a curve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, florists are real busy with a lot of things. They aren't for weddings either.
Well, I guess that's just like the...
Okay, wait. Okay, we got to back up. I think we may have been spoofed. Yeah, the lost Chinese miner is a gag.
That's what I thought.
Is it what?
It's a gag. It's not real.
That's what I thought.
I figured it, but I wanted to change the subject with something.
Yeah.
Yeah, why? Yeah. But here's the thing. One of the reasons why we want such stories to be true is we see ourselves as survivors, and people have survived many things. I decided to go scroll through the comments to see if there were additional sources. But here's the thing. We have to be our own consumers of news and information. And, of course, with a lot of the consolidation of the media, we gain less. Bob, I don't know if you saw it, but Nicole Sandler posted that AM 760 in Denver, one of the Clear Channel outlets that had progressive talk, is going to lose the format. They can.
Yeah, what are they moving to? Sports talk, Will?
They said apparently from one of the articles in the Denver Post, they trademarked something like Real Talk News or something like that. So it might be another conservative talker. Similarly, even the stations that are continuing, like WCPT, WCPT has 8:20 a.m., which is a very weak a.m., signal, although it's 24
hours. Right, the progressive stations always go on the flickering candle flame, and the right-wing gas bags go on the 50,000-watt blowtorch.
Right. Well, in this case, the stations are independently owned, but two of the three FM affiliates are going to Polish Music Radio on June 2nd. So we'll still have our progressive talk station here and one FM affiliate in the western suburbs, but it isn't, I mean, even an independent outfit can't really afford to buy the big signals because those are now owned by the big boys.
Well, I mean, it's a matter of economics. You pay for what you are able to pay for, and that's it. And you're lucky to have a Polish radio station.
50,000 Clear Channel is all, you know, that radio talk, which Bob understands, of course. I mean, that's all. We have it here in Cleveland, and the number one talk show host here is the guy that couldn't find his belly button.
And, you know, as far as the talk on these things are concerned, and I'm talking about one station over here, Bob is as well with an old buddy of ours who used to make himself...
The man who gave us the Titanic plates, yeah.
Oh, yeah, he gave us the Titanic plates. Now, they've replaced him, and hell, I wish he was back, because, number one, it was a source of immense humor. Two, I'd love to call in occasionally and try to, you know, see if I can put him in the hospital.
Oh, come on, I've heard you call him and flush the toilet, Jim. Don't, yeah. I mean, you're among friends, you can tell, you can dish.
How dare you? No, that's when I would actually put the phone to my rear end and break wind.
I heard you do that, too.
Thank you. But anyway, I did my part. But nonetheless, but what they have now, my God, they've got some stuff on
there. Oh, yeah, I heard her. What is her name? Some Fox woman, Andrea Tarantula or something like that?
There's some guy on there besides her. And
Karen Talos or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
She actually made Media Matters with some of her remarks.
Well,
here's the
people she interviews, I mean, the talk is so vitriolic. And these people around here, that's what they listen to.
But she's got a real talent, Jim, because she's not only vitriolic, she is vapid in the process. She is vapidly vitriolic, and you gotta work your little fox ass off to get vapid and vitriolic.
Well, that's true. But they've got some guy on here now. I think they've changed. Like I say, I never listen to that station anymore now that old idiot's gone, because, you know, he was too fun, too much fun to listen to and get into. But nonetheless, they've got, you know, all these guests who come on there. And honestly and truly, it's just, and I just happened to cut it on the other day. And it's changed from that woman, or maybe they had a guest person on there or not, but it is so vitriolic and so hateful, and it's much worse than it used to be. Like I say, Dr. Goebbels would be real proud if he were around.
Hey, time out, technical moment. Somebody's got the audio of the program going in the background.
Not I.
All right. Somebody on the phone, I think.
Yeah, it's on the phone side. Jim, too?
All right. I'll go ahead. I just cut it off.
Okay, thank you. It gets it can get real confusing real quick, believe me. Nope, somebody's still got it going.
Going back to Jim's point of just economics, the thing that isn't right about that is it really not just economics. It's the fact that, like the other Jim says, the big boys have bought up all the radio stations, and therefore they're pricing you out of buying the station. If all things were equal, you would be able to compete with them for stations.
Well, and yeah, to that extent, Kevin, you can't just say, well, you know, the big boys have them all. If one abandons a field of contest to the other opponent, one cannot just say the other opponent is being mean to us. And it's not like liberal money left radio because they were getting their asses handed to them. They left liberal radio because they don't understand the value of it. And that is just plain and simple. I mean, I got a thing here.
I agree with that.
I got a thing here. Time out. This will make you a little bit crazy. But since we're here, since we're talking on the topic of radio, I have
strap in.
Yep, strap in. Get the tennis balls. Because, and how did we not expect this? This is, of course, America's truth detector, the man who broadcasts with half his brain tied behind his back, the man with talent on loan from God. This is the oxymoron. It's Flush Flimball. I am ashamed of myself, and I'll say this now. I am ashamed of myself because the first thing I thought when I heard, and it was the first time I'd ever heard it, when I first heard the name Boko Haram, I immediately thought of a song.
Boko Haram?
Yeah.
Yes, I thought Proko Haram.
Okay, I'm so... Thank you, Will. I'm so glad I'm not alone.
Proko Haram, too.
Guess what? I understand some Arabic words just from the context of history, but I mean, that was one of the things that popped in mind, as well as haram, forbidden. And, the situation in Nigeria is tragic. And one thing that is a very minor aspect of the overall tragedy is such fanatics are really feeding into the narrative that Limbaugh, Hannity, Beck, et al. Sell, namely that the world is a dangerous place full of evil non-Christians. Quick, the only way to deal with a foreign policy issue is by force, the threat of force.
Yeah, so here we are. Everybody knows what Boko Haram has done now. You know, kidnapping girls, selling them into slavery. And it's horrible, and there's an outcry that something must be done.
But, you know, Bob, that's been going on for years over there.
To a certain extent, but this is a ramping up.
But, I mean, this is really, really a revelation and an uncovering of what's been going over there for years.
Some of it has, but like I said, this is a ramping up.
Right.
I mean, the Lord's Resistance Army was there, but this is kind of new. This is such a new nastiness that Al-Qaeda itself has said, no, these are not our guys. These are so not our guys, because Boko Haram's out there blowing away other Muslims to steal girls. It's disgusting.
Well, right.
Wait, please, because I'm moving towards something because we got the tennis ball and the duct tape out. So the man with talent on loan from God, and Devin reminds me, margin call. Flush Flimball, the street drug junkie, decided to opine about the Boko Haram horrors. And this is what you get, courtesy of Media Matters for America. Oh, my God. I mean, this is just disgusting.
enthrall us with his acumen.
Well, it ain't acumen, Jim. Well, what the hell's going on? Okay, this is weird. Hold on.
We'll see if the machine is rebelling against the content matter.
I think the machine is. This is just disgusting. And it won't, for some reason or other, it won't play. I'll find, give me a second here.
What did the old asshole say, Bob?
It's gonna make me vomit a little bit in my throat if I just read it.
Well, that just what the, you know, I mean, nobody could be shocked by what he says. What did he say?
He said, and this is a direct quote, "Oh my God, are you kidding? Are you serious? Snerdly is telling me in my IFB that we can't criticize Boko Haram because they're black? They're African and they're black, and so we can't criticize them for that? You know, that's real slave blood we're talking about here. I'm going to tell you something. If that's the case, then the next thing you're going to tell me is that we can't criticize the leader because he looks like someone who lives in Chicago. Looks like one of the gang leaders in Chicago. You really think that's true, that you can't criticize people because they're black? They're black Islamists, and so black Islamists have a special place reserved where they get no outrage and no criticism." Holy...
Well, as usual, Mr. Limbaugh demonstrates that he is, if I may paraphrase Christopher Hitchens about the late Jerry Falwell, the man is so full of crap that if he had an enema, he could fit into a matchbox as his coffin.
Oh, well. Amen.
Do you notice the subtle reference to the sitting president of the United States?
Subtle?
Oh, yeah.
That is about as subtle as 500 people trying to sneak up on someone by playing every marching band instrument they can get a hold of loudly and badly.
Yeah, straight out of the Warner Brothers. Yeah, that's subtle.
Yes.
Well, you will be pleased to know, however, Will, that he did not, and Jim One especially, that he did not limit his remarks to saying that one, they no longer criticize black people. He's also mad at the Pope.
Oh, what did Pope Francis do to incur his ire?
Well, it turns out that Pope Francis delivered a homily suggesting that the capitalist world redistribute wealth up to perhaps 50% to raise the well-being of the poor. You know,
well,
he's kind of, you know, no,
that.
This is brand new. This is an extension.
I heard this through another channel, Bob.
Oh, okay. But yeah, this is a fairly new statement. And it's a brand new statement. Calling on 50% wealth redistribution, which immediately, the oxymoron was thinking, what? 50% of the billions that I've worked to make? And he said, Pope Francis called today for governments to redistribute wealth to the poor in a new spirit of generosity to help curb the economy of exclusion that is taking hold today. The Pope is describing charity, and that's what the church is for. But the Pope is demanding that the United Nations somehow use its influence to get member states to redistribute wealth. That's Marxism. That's socialism.
Well, may I interject something when you finish, please?
That's the end of the quote.
Well, basically, I heard the same thing, and it came through EWTN. I listened to, and also Vatican Radio, and they had a commentator on there with him saying, well, you know, the Pope's only one person, and the Pope may project an image, but the image that he's trying to project is not reality, and basically nothing is going to change. And this is what Monsignor said.
Yeah, it's a nice sentiment, but it ain't going to happen.
That's basically what we said, yeah.
But the fact that I don't understand, I really don't. And this goes back to stuff I was talking about at the beginning of the program. I do not understand what it is about the right wing that they just hate so many people. You know, because, well, the ad that got me rolling last night, she'll go to Washington and fight against Obamacare. You know, bullshit. What she's saying is she will go to Washington and fight against sick people. Man, that takes a lot of courage to fight the sick and the weak, doesn't it?
Yeah, but Bob, that goes back, and I don't know why I'm always drawn to it, but it goes back to that sect of Protestantism, I can't think of the name, you know, the ones pull yourself up, you're born into a chosen class, what's the sect?
Predestination?
It was the one where if you're born into a good family, that's...
Oh, that's Calvinism.
Calvinism, exactly.
Yeah,
that seems to go throughout this society, and I think it even invades Catholicism to some extent. I would imagine there's probably an aspect, and I don't know that much. Well, actually, I kind of do. I've never been a Catholic, practicing Catholic, thank God. The non-existent guy spoke, but I'm sure they have that. Well, because it's God's will that you were born with this, that you were born with this situation.
Well, and that's the thing. We are living in a time of a sort of economic Calvinism, where you know these assholes. I mean, I'm fresh out of words to describe them when I get to that point. They're declaring that, by God, if you get sick and you're not wealthy, God means for you to die. Because
these are misanthropes. Bob, I think the word you are searching is for misanthrope. Namely, someone who hates humans and humanity. I can be very critical of my fellow human beings, particularly when they act as badly as Boko Haram, or show ignorance like Mr. Limbaugh seems to do on an hourly basis or by every second. But what we have now is a situation where too many in power view people as resources, as cogs in their machines, not fellow human beings, but people who can be used to further their ends. And if their environment is polluted along the way, if their jobs are so toxic that they end up living 10, 15 years less, so be it. I have to question the morality of these people, because based on any reasonable moral code I have ever encountered in this world or in reading about thousands of years of human history, these people who are willing to pollute and harm others are not only misanthropic, but I will use a word I do not use lightly, evil, taking delight in the suffering of others.
They have counter-morality.
Language. It's like when you go for a job somewhere, where do you go? Human resources. And it's just like with, I've noticed on TV, when I watch it, or the news, the corporate news, and it's, you're not a citizen, you're not a human being,
you're a
consumer, some part of the clog. I think I talked about that last week or so, well back, right, Bob?
They used to call it personnel, now they call it human resources. Think of the difference between the words. At least personnel had some type of humanity to it. Human resources is what they can take out of you for a very least amount that they can pay you. And the most
another extractive resource, right, Jim?
That's it. We got it.
Yeah, well, it's like Pink Floyd song. All in all, you're just another brick in the wall.
Yep.
You want to have trouble, go deal with the medical situation that I deal with, that I have dealt with since, you know, when the money goes to hell, and they're around. They stop by here without any warning. The nurse will show up, or this guy will show up, or that guy. It's like, man, I feel like I should have sit here with that damn Mossberg and a cradle in my arms, and when they open the door, just blow them apart. You know, that's how you get after a while, the bureaucracy of the whole. And I don't know, I talked to Canadians, I talked to so many of them 20 years ago that like their system. But we get it going here, and it has to become part of the freaking bureaucracy.
No, it has to become part of the capitalist miracle, Bill.
Yes, yes.
I saw a beautiful little note on Facebook earlier today. A Canadian person saying, whenever some American says something mean about Canada, I go to the doctor and I get my feelings checked for free.
Yes. Here's the irony.
To go on what Bill was talking about, Will.
Well,
I guess you didn't hear me.
Yeah, well, I did have to step away for a bit.
Kevin, what did you have to say, son?
Yeah, go, Kevin.
Go.
Well, just to go piggyback on what Bill's talking about, both me and him have vision problems and are on Social Security. Because of I'm on disability, I get a whole $1,000 a month. And I assume Bill gets somewhere in the same. But $1,000 a month we're supposed to live off of? I mean, I get a whole $36 a month in food stamps. Now, $36 a month, that's a little bit over a dollar a day for food, if you average it out. And
yeah, but that's four packages of ramen as long as you don't go for the...
That's
$1.20.
Right, exactly. But we worked all our lives. We didn't ask to become disabled. And Bill's generation especially had this promise of Social Security, but it by no means was it supposed to be the full income they were going to get. They were supposed to get a retirement, et cetera, et cetera. And my generation doesn't even have that promise. You know,
no,
we didn't grow up with that same promise our parents grew up with. And what's the next generation left with? Our children growing up, they'll have even less.
And Bill,
well,
they've already started brainwashing
them
for decades.
Hey, too many people going at two at one time. Finish, Kevin.
Oh, that was all I was
going
to say.
Mowing the lawn.
It's sad.
Oh, wait, it's one of my neighbors. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Well, as I have said on a number of occasions, this is a very brutal country. And look, you want to know what the next generation's going to get, Kevin? I'll tell you what the next generation's going to get: bupkis. Because the goal of the right wing in this country is, and I don't like being this cynical, but it's also a function of realism. The goal of the right wing in this country is to make sure that there is nothing left in the way of any kind of social safety net by the time that this country ceases to be a white majority country. Because, by God, they didn't sweat and slave and labor to provide all this for people who won't go to damn work. And by people who won't go to damn work, they always mean people of color. Because, you know, it's never mind the fact that the vast majority of social welfare recipients in this country are white. Well, that's fine. But when that's no longer the case, we want to make sure it's not there anymore. Because, by God, it's our country, not their country.
You know,
essentially, you have people who want serfs.
Bob?
Yeah, Jim.
You'd be closer to that than you think, because, I mean, I have not heard about efforts to convene a constitutional convention.
Yeah.
And
the Horn is about the only people who are really talking about it much at all, except for the progressives who live apparently in Sparkle Pony Fart Land, who think that, well, great, we'll have a constitutional convention, and then we can roll back Citizens United. I mean...
No.
There's a lot of politicians.
Elle est risible, okay? It is to laugh.
Oh, I talked to one who's a real Tea Party person, not too much, but every time I talk to her, she's going on about the Tea Party and about a constitutional convention in which they can get rid of so many programs and this, that, and the other.
Well, remember the first motto of the Tea Party. We're going to take our country back.
Well, here's the thing with her, and I'm not mentioning any names. For some reason, she was able to withdraw $26,000 or $22,000 in Social Security to which she's not entitled, okay?
Yeah.
And this has been appealed to an ALJ, an administrative law judge, and she called me for advice about it. And I told her, I said, look, who told you that you were entitled, and she's hated Social Security because the only thing she has is her federal retirement, okay? She didn't get Social Security, but she did get it from her husband. Nonetheless, I said, who told you you were entitled to this money? Oh, my neighbors. And I said, why didn't you go down to the Social Security office and put all your papers on the table and really get the advice that you needed, and now you're not going to be in hock to Social Security for $22,000. Now, recently, they have negated all efforts, except for the past 10 years, the people who owed Social Security money to which they were not entitled. But that did not include her. And her reply was, this government is trying to kill me, trying to destroy me. And my reply to her was, no, you've done it to yourself. And you knew damn well what you were doing. You knew damn well that you weren't entitled to that money. And you knew damn well that you should have gone to that office and found out exactly what that to which you were entitled.
Well, that's the other thing I just heard recently in the last week, couple of days. They want to close all Social Security offices, put everything online, put all the work or cut way back on labor.
That's just, it.
You know, for Social Security. And a lot of people are, and this is a little, on as computer savvy as us. I mean, and I'm barely computer savvy, but I mean, I'm learning, but, you don't know how to operate a computer. A file for your benefits if they close the offices down. And where's the human contact? And what's wrong with giving a person a job?
Well, that's the inherent bias of thinking that the internet is some sort of catch-all panacea. It's great for the younger generation, but there's a lot of people out there. I mean, my roommate in the hospital looked at me and said, I wouldn't even know how to turn a computer on. And that wasn't him saying that he's not intelligent. He's plenty intelligent. But it is not part of the world in which he lives. Yeah. And there is a certain economic and there's a certain economic bias and a certain amount of ageism involved in this notion that everything is going to be doable online. It's kind of the way that Microsoft abandons, say, it's operating platforms after a while. They just decide that whoever's still running them don't matter. They simply do not matter. And so we'll just
buy a new one.
Go buy a new one or upgrade the operating system. And if not, we're going to leave you to the tender mercies of the hackers and the virus coders. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you deserve it because, well, you didn't get out there and play in the, and play in the internet wonderland.
God, who wants to play in the internet wonderland?
That's social Darwinism, right?
Well, I don't like that phrase, but
I don't either. But because I've heard it used.
Because and the reason I don't like that phrase, Jim, is because it isn't Darwinism. Darwin was never a proponent of that stuff, but it was used by people who hate Darwin in the first place to slur him by reference.
Right,
exactly.
And I agree with you 100%. But I've just heard it thrown around, and I know exactly what it means. And just like you, I feel the same way about it because I think it was a very enlightened and great man. But that's exactly what it is. They throw that in, but I just use it because it's used so much. If I'm not mistaken, to me.
Well, let me ask a question. Hey, Sergi, you still there?
Yes, I am.
I'm sorry to make you the person who answers this question, but is the Internet still a very, very white place?
Depends what part of the Internet. Because here's the thing. I mean, Internet use has pretty much become semi-universal across all races, at least here in America. Because, you know, even people who don't own computers will often own smartphones. And if you don't even own that, it's a short trip to the library. So, I mean, pretty much everybody uses the Internet nowadays, but, like, it depends. The demographics change depending on where you are on the Internet. You look at people who play MMOs, you know, basically online games, for instance. Well, that's a very white field. You look at people who are on Facebook, that's a very mixed field, you know.
Well, I just remember reading some numbers a couple of years ago that said that, that you know, meaningful access to so-called high-speed Internet and the fact that we even use that phrase in regard to American Internet is kind of ludicrous. I think we lost Kevin. But the reason I ask that is because it's all part of it's all part of a very divided nation. And if we are getting to a place where access to the Internet is a critical necessity of ability to function in the so-called modern world, then by definition we are still deliberately leaving people out. Does that make any sense?
Oh, definitely. That's part of the grand plan, I would say.
Divide and conquer is a strategy older than the pyramids, Bob. And unfortunately, it's one that works time and time again because I think we define ourselves too narrowly. And if you think about it, a lot of the rhetoric these days is to try to set one person against the other. I mean, that's pretty much Rush Limbaugh's stick. I mean, to him, the most horrifying planet would be one where all the inhabitants were the same shade of gray and looked identical.
Because he wouldn't be able to hate anybody right off the bat, right?
Exactly. He wouldn't know what to do. Similarly, there would be something more horrifying for him. A world where the indigenous inhabitants are shapeshifters and telepaths, in which case that would frighten the hell out of him because every dirty secret would be before him and they could literally show him what his face looks like when certain things are revealed. But I think that your point on Internet is important. I have a friend who's in Alabama near where a Korean car factory is, and one of the complaints of people in the Montgomery area who moved there from Korea is how slow the Internet is. It's about 10 times slower. Why? Because Korea and a lot of other countries have decided Internet is infrastructure. Here, we are afraid to even fix roads as infrastructure.
True on all counts, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, Bob, how many times have we talked about that?
Well, I mean, if you...
I mean, infrastructure.
All these attempts have been made to introduce children to the world of the Internet.
Right.
But at the same time, we're only teaching them how to click things in many ways. I know, you know, there's no coding class in the high school that my kids attended that I'm aware of. But, you know, there's keyboarding. That's a class. It used to be called typing. Now it's called keyboarding.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's just getting us to that third world level, so we're just happy to get that $7 a day to live off of, you know.
Yeah, and that that $36 a month in food subsidies. Jesus, don't spend it all in one place. When Kevin mentioned that, I wanted to scream.
Really?
You know, that's what happens when Republicans cut SNAP benefits.
I mean, I can see that in a lot of levels, I agree with Malloy that there's not that much difference between Republicans and Democrats. But by the same token, I agree a lot with you that, yeah, there is a big difference. I mean, at least still, although the Democrats are day by day getting worse and worse, but at least still they do basically seem to care a lot more about the American people than the Republicans. I mean, Republicans are just psychopaths. But
well, and Republicans are also largely monolithic, Jim, whereas Democrats can, it goes back to that wonderful old line from Will Rogers, I am not a member of an organized political party. I am a Democrat.
Right. And Bob, remember what Gore Vidal said?
Yeah, they're all the same.
He said there are two parties in this country. It's a property party. One end is Democrat, the other is Republican.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, Dr. Bill did an admirable job of dealing with that the other day insofar as he addressed the issue that property is not the end goal of the pursuit of happiness. If the framers had meant the pursuit of property, they damned well had the vocabulary to say it. It wasn't because they were crafting something that they wanted to sound pretty. It was that the pursuit of happiness had a decidedly different meaning then as opposed to what has been attached to it now.
Yeah, happiness is how much you can own, buddy.
Yeah, and the guy who dies with the most toys wins, right?
Yep, there was a guy up here on the record store. He'd spout that crap at us over breakfast. He's lucky he walked out of there. There was three or four of us that figured he should crawl out with a foot up his ass. You know, I'm from that old school, that old greaser school, Bob. What can I tell you? You know, my hairstyle changed, but a lot of the attitude is, don't push me too hard. Go up on a housing project. This is how you feel. Believe me, I was subjected to a lot of fighting with kids that were, if one of them couldn't beat you, three of them would sure try.
Yeah, exactly.
I had four guys stop me at 2 o'clock in the morning and I was going into one of the all night greasy hamburger stands and these guys wanted to fight and I just slipped my wrist and I said, come on, let's go. And they're looking at 6 inches of steel. Cause I didn't play, Bob. I never would play. But somebody had to be threatening with me before I would play with them. I mean, you had to come right out and want to, because it was I don't know, you guys are too young and lost. Some of you remember the old greaser school of philosophy. Kick his ass. That was more common than I like to remember. It didn't help me. I left school to get a different place to live. And it wasn't racial, by the way.
No, it was economic.
Absolutely. It was a mindset. They see you reading the book, then you're a goddamn sissy. That's fair.
And the best cure for that is to beat your ass.
Exactly. Or try to. Yep. I mean, that's a bad way to live, and I did put up with that crap for years. And, for years and years. I mean, Bob, from 1980 until 2000, that lump under my left arm was not a sub sandwich. And that's a hell of a thing for me to say because I never hurt anybody in my life, but I wasn't about to be hurt by other people. And it's a thinking pattern that it starts at the lowest level of sophistication, and then it works its way up to the big money people that we're talking about tonight. Because when they hurt you, it's not some guy physically breaking your arm. It's some guy comes along and breaks your heart.
Well,
that's
the problem.
They do that
by breaking your pocketbook. By putting you in such a place where you can't afford to live anymore because each year it's always the cost of doing business. It's always, things are just going up. They just got to go up.
Yeah. They got to charge more cars, man. When I started driving, it was $700 a year for liability insurance until you were 27 years old. And every time I turn around, is it me, fellas, and whoever is online here? But every time I turn around, there's a goddamn insurance company commercial. You know what I mean, man?
Oh, Flo?
Well, Flo, yeah. Lizards, pigs, the guy with the deep voice.
Mm-hmm.
You guys might get a kick out of this. I got my ass chewed royally one night after the program when I was still on terrestrial radio, because I'd been talking about a bill in the West Virginia legislature.
Oh, I remember this.
And I said, listen, you need to understand something. At the end of the day, you are not in good hands with Allsnake, and Snake Farm is not like a good neighbor.
I remember that, too.
Well, the Snake Farm agent called the general manager, and the Allsnake manager called the general called the general manager, and the fundamentalist who general manages that outfit I thought he was going to turn purple. I thought I was going to watch the birth of an aneurysm.
Well, simply enough, Bob, the people who hate health insurance, government health insurance, they're the same people that hate private automobile insurance. Do they think there's a difference between private health and private automobile? Go ahead, Jim. I'm sorry I interrupted.
No. Well, point well taken. Hey, I need to interrupt this. Sparky has something that Tim sent him that Tim wants Sparky to read.
Okay. It's called The Incredible Hillbilly.
Oh, God. Maybe I rescind permission.
Bob Kincaid, talk show host, any mountaintop removal activist, searching for a way to end mountaintop removal, then testing of radiation at the hospital alters his body chemistry. And now when Bob grows angry or outraged from the stupidity of Republicans, Colocrats, teabaggers, and Christians, a startling metamorphosis occurs. The creature is driven by rage and pursued by the right wing and Agent Fred. And in parentheses, Kincaid right wingers don't make me angry. You won't like me when I'm angry. The creature is wanted for speaking truth to power. Bob Kincaid is believed to be the answer to any mountaintop removal, and he must let the world know this until he can find a way to direct the raging spirit to morons that dwells within him.
Oh, I tell you the truth. I felt a little bit like that creature last night, because they gave me a pair of pajama bottoms that were like three sizes too small.
Oh my God.
Yeah, they were more like clam diggers, and I thought I was just going to bust right through them at any minute.
What color were they?
Small hotel pants.
They were kind of a beige check, Jim.
Okay. You know what I mean by hotel pants?
Yes.
I mean, fashion statement is very important.
They wound up coming to about mid calf. I mean, I was styling.
Very good.
Did you break into a couple of verses of Fashion by David Bowie?
I'm sorry, Jim, one, you were saying?
You had on physical shoes.
Okay, go ahead.
One more time, Jim, one.
You had on sensible shoes, of course.
Absolutely. Sperry topsiders.
Very good.
They go so well with the clam diggers when they're in season.
Trey Comeau folk.
I thought so. Merci. Yes, Jim, too.
No, I was asking if you broke into a couple of verses of Fashion by David Bowie.
No, it was more like I feel pretty.
Oh, okay.
And witty. Gay.
And bright.
And I want
that was an old country.
And I pity is the country patient who is with me today, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
it's
God.
Old country song called Hospitality Blues. If somebody could dig that up and play it, this is exactly what you're talking about. All the only line I can remember is They gave me a gown to put on, but the thing was so short I had to leave on my pants. It was one of those talking blues things, and it was a guy with a West Virginia, Kentucky accent to his music. It was called Hospitality Blues.
Bob, I think you felt just like Rita Moreno, didn't you?
Oh, God, absolutely. Happy to be in America.
Bless your heart, I swear. Well, at least things came out okay. That's good. And they treated you nice.
They were. And, you know, you can't blame them.
You have a support system that you didn't have before.
I really would love to, and maybe I will. I might drop them a note about their Chinese apple juice.
Well, did you have to drink it?
I didn't have any water. I can't take the caffeine in the coffee, and the apple juice was Chinese. So they said, did you drink anything? Have you peed? And I said, well, I did earlier, but I didn't drink anything because there's nothing there I can drink.
They didn't have water for you?
And she said, oh, here's your water. Thank you.
Well, when you're thirsty, it's better than nothing.
But I'm sorry. I was not going to drink that Chinese apple juice. And I don't mean that. I really want to not come across as xenophobic in that. Because that's not what it's about. It's about toxicity.
No, if you don't want to drink it.
They should have thrown that in and told them why.
I mean, you know. I mean, I don't even know about the water anymore. But, you know. I'm a big water drinker anyway. I love water.
Oh, I drink more of that than anything else.
And, you know, that's plain water, not scotch in it, too. I probably drink a gallon of water a night.
Put the coffee in my coffee.
You got it. But, you know, hey.
You're kidding? What? Fish fucking that.
Hey, Bob.
Yes, Sparky.
Did you happen to catch the little segment they did on The Daily Show the other night about the West Virginia water?
Yes, I did.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, and not NIMBY, but FIMBY. Fuck! It's in my backyard!
And see, Bob, the rest of us don't really know how bad our water is.
Yeah, I do. I do.
Oh, okay.
And I'm sure she won't be getting any Koch Brothers money.
Not after going on The Daily Show.
Oh, God. But the thing is, Sparky, it was funny to watch if you could step back from it. But it wasn't so easy to watch, you know. Because the questions still remain, and the questions have never, not only have they not been answered, they will never be answered. They haven't even been approached.
Mm-hmm.
What if people, remember the boys there at Freedom Industries didn't even want the DEP guys to see the stuff. They had built a dike already that had failed, so who knows how long it took to fail. Who knows how long that had been going on? Because remember, the people who lived around there said it had been stinking since Christmas.
Oh.
So it's not just this, you know, maybe 6 or 7 hours that people were drinking this stuff. It may be weeks.
Yeah, see, one of the interesting things about that is that that's probably the only way you'd get it on corporate TV is to make, you know, through The Daily Show or something like that. You're not going to have the corporate news media really go into it too much, or you'd end up with the chick off of them. She does all the commercials for the how great the fracking industry is. You know, the blonde fracking chick. You know who I'm talking about? You have somebody like her talking about how great.
Bob's favorite
Nancy Grace. Oh, Jesus, please.
Or Ashley Banfield. Now, who is it now? You tell me you have a hot for one or the other. Which one is it?
I flip a coin every morning, Jim.
I'm sure you do.
But, you know, I don't know if anybody can, I don't know if there's any room left in my heart since Elizabeth Hasselbeck came into it.
Oh, my Lord.
Oh, a little note, going forward, we got about 26 minutes left in the program officially, and we are still at that $40 level, trying to get at least $110 more into the into the horn for bill paying purposes. Of course, you know, me being out playing hooky and, you know, being sick or whatever yesterday didn't help. But yeah, eleven people, $10 a piece, fine. But yeah, there's about $110 to go. So just so folks know that. Had a note coming in from Robert in Australia. He said, as our forward look, we were talking about internet a little bit ago. As our forward looking, technically educated Prime Minister Tony Abbott, sir, that's Sir Tony Abbott of the air, said in response to the Liberal Party's plan to scale back the national broadband network, nobody needs more than 25 Mbps. Robert says, I needed 25 Mbps 5 years ago. My ADSL 2 Plus connection currently tests at 10 Mbps, even though it's a 24 meg connection. In 5 years, I expect I'll need at least 50 meg, but still only have what I have now. What our Prime Minister has done is turn internet speed and access into a political issue, which it isn't. By the way, the Liberal Party has its first budget due on May 20th. So for the last few weeks, we've been getting stories about how we're going broke, how half of Australians get more in welfare payments than they pay in income tax, and on and on and on. My opinion is that we're being set up for a massive push to privatize everything, cut Medicare, cut pensions, cut, 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 and sell, sell, sell. In other words, the United States has had a conservative sneezing fit, and Australia is about to catch the austerity flu.
It's worked
badly everywhere where it's been tried.
Well, they're going to privatize the internet as far as, you know, that sort of thing is concerned, and they're going to take over the internet, and they're going to make as much money from it as they can. I mean, that's where everything's going now. You know, like telephones or any other form of communication, they're going to capitalize on that big time. We've only seen the start of that. We talk about different operating systems. My God, that's just the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
You go on a computer and everything is basically, I mean, you've got some free service. You still got relatively things you can do, but it's just a bit commercial.
I mean, I have these pop-ups I can't get rid of. I mean, the thing that I've been seeing lately, every day, is ProFlowers. How many of you seen that recently?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you just need a pop-up blocker, Jim.
No, you can't get rid of these things.
Well, the flower ads are all over a lot of the talk shows.
Well, that's because it's Mother's Day.
Don't pick a day for anything, Bob. Anything you want to mention, they're going to try to sell you something. And flowers are ridiculous, you know.
And then when flowers go away because of Mother's Day, you got Flo up there doing her thing.
Oh, God.
And, you know, it's just all kinds of stuff. And lately I've been getting one about, do I want to meet men or women in Beckley? Now, that's a real poser right there. You want me to go into that one?
No, I've seen those pop up in sidebars. I won't, you know, don't touch them. Those are just toxic.
They used to have to go to saloons and hang out there to meet the professionals, you know?
Oh, God.
My God, when I was 17, I sure met a lot of them.
Thing about those pop-ups and such, whenever it mentions your local city, it's a fill-in-the-blank. The little applet running in your web browser, whatever you want to call it, looks at your IP address, and whatever city your IP address is assigned to, it'll just fill in the blank. Like, I get ones that say, in Fort Worth.
Yeah.
But if
police in Beckley hate this one trick to avoid traffic tickets.
Mm-hmm, the same thing with that, too. You know, and like when I take my same, you know, I have a laptop here. If I take this laptop to, say, downtown Dallas and use Wi-Fi there, it'll say Dallas. You know?
Right.
Hmm. Well,
you know, it's like I used to get one sometimes. You kind of, I can be in your at your place, and I'm 7 miles away from you, And it came up more than once, and it was just like, and it was at different times. I just found it weird that it was always 7 miles away. It's just like, oh, this is too, you're 7 miles away. Yeah, right.
Well, you want to talk about city mouse versus country mouse. When the country mice went to Las Vegas, we were stunned to walk down the strip, and there was an easily battalion strength of people handing out little collectible playing cards of naked women with escort service phone numbers on them.
Jesus Christ!
I was thinking they were probably at least three quarters of them were probably the police.
No, what you buy is probably you buy Sharon Stone.
No, those are probably like real hookers, or because I mean,
it ain't legal in Vegas.
Well, yeah, outside of Vegas, you know, you just take a ride out to the one of the surrounding counties. You know, I mean, technically it's not illegal, but actually it is. If you have enough money, anything's legal. Ask the Koch brothers.
Well, that's the guy
who owns the basketball team owner.
Yeah, who, by the way, was not a racist. He was merely horny.
Right. Is that what he says?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, it's not that I'm a racist. I was mad because I was jealous.
I was thinking of what Left Me and Warren said in that thing. I'm horny.
Jesus. Yeah, okay, there's one for the ages. How many radio programs are there out there tonight with a Leslie Ann Warren reference? I think we're the only one.
Oh, God, I can't even remember what movie that quote came from. What the hell was it?
Wasn't she on Mission Impossible 2 for a while?
I don't know. I think that was Barbara. Wasn't that Barbara Baines or somebody like that?
Well, she was, but I think Leslie Ann Warren was for a little while,
was
too.
Too. God, they've got something now called WeTV, and they show all this old stuff all night. It's pretty good, you know.
Oh, Twilight Zone, Perry Mason.
Perry Mason, and then Night Gallery. And
she was on this.
Thriller. And they show Thriller, and that's Wagon Train.
Oh, my God, you're kidding.
You
got to stay up late for that, don't you?
Well, sometimes I just sort of...
Gunsmoke during the day, probably, and...
Say what now?
Gunsmoke.
No, I don't do the Love Boat. I don't do that.
No, I said Gunsmoke.
Marshall Dillon. No, I hadn't done Marshall Dillon in a long time. But you know one program that I miss I used to watch as a kid, I don't know if you remember it or not, called Adventures in Paradise.
Yeah, that's before my time, Jim.
I've got a question just out of the blue. If I've just been back in my mind. Has anybody seen, it's on... I forget one of the cable channels, but it's where they put like these two people on an island, totally naked.
Oh yeah,
with uh-huh. one tool each and
uh-huh.
survive
naked
and scared.
Oh, naked and scared, and then naked and dangerous, and all this kinds of stuff, and yeah, I've seen those. I mean, I couldn't believe that when I saw it. I mean, two people walk around butt-ass naked except for a belt, and they pixelize out their privates, and, you know, like I could be bothered. And this woman's got tits hanging down to her knees, and they're talking about scorpions and all kinds of stuff. And then they have a meter by which they measure their ability to...
Survivability.
Yeah. I mean, I thought to myself... Dear God, what in the hell is this? And these people aren't even remotely attractive.
Well, I mean, after a day or two, it's kind of hard. But no, I find it interesting, but I'm wondering if it's kind of fixed like a lot of these so-called reality shows. But and they do admit that this cameras, you know, they are being filmed and that they do have people, if emergency happens, then they will, you know, rescue them.
My favorite is Taxi Cab Confessions.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that's my favorite. I mean, if I could find out when it's going to be on HBO, I would definitely set set by whatever to record it, because they do have some strange people that come into those cabs.
Yeah, both Vegas and New York, yeah.
Right, right, right. That's, thank you. That's my number one favorite waste of time, absolutely. You see that, haven't you, Bob?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Of course, every time.
I don't know why I don't see that stuff anymore. I didn't have cable anymore, but. Oh, see the hell I lived it. What am I saying?
What, wagon train? No. Sorry.
Yeah.
I couldn't resist, Bill.
Ward Bond.
Well, who was that? That was Ward Bond at first, and Ward was a buddy with John Wayne, wasn't he? You know, that's where he made a lot of movies with Wayne, I think.
Well, I don't know. You have to wait to see who can come out and clear out the area for you, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, we got confirmation from Randy. Just wrote in and said, yes, Leslie Ann Warren was on Mission Impossible. Ah, my steel trap memory is once again confirmed.
Oh, she was in that movie with Robert Preston. What the hell was that thing called? I swear, my brain.
Not The Music Man.
No, not The Music Man. It was something else.
We Got Trouble. I'm sorry.
Nah, I can't quite remember that one. But nonetheless, that's just one of the quotes that I remember that she belted out sometime in the 80s or something. But it's just amazing the stuff you see on TV today. I mean, really is. I mean, it's almost like a train wreck or a traffic thing. You know, you look and you put your fingers in front of your thing and you squint and it's just like this, and then you say, oh, no, did they say that? Did they do that?
Well, and speaking of train wrecks, Jim, and this I know this is not your cup of tea, but it cannot go unmentioned.
Yes, sir.
The Cleveland Browns drafted Johnny Football.
Who's that?
Johnny Manziel, came out as a sophomore. Entered the draft as a sophomore from Texas A&M. Kid's a total ass. I noticed that our buddy Brandon from Brooklyn is absolutely convinced that whoever gets him is going to be a winner, and I'm totally convinced that Johnny Manziel is Tim Tebow without the endearing qualities.
Do you see what Fritz put in the chat room?
No.
#Tebow with a beer.
That's the one. Is that the Hey, Fritz, is that the going hashtag for him now?
Well, that's the one I come up with. He's obnoxious, except that, unlike the original Tebow, Johnny does like to take a swig every once in a while.
I was thinking it was more like a guzzle, wasn't it?
You know, us Southern people have to be kind of understated sometimes.
Well, absolutely, but see, I don't see him having big success with the Browns.
Well, my problem with the Browns is the first year I followed them, there was a guy named Otto who was throwing the football.
Wasn't Otto Graham?
There ain't many like him. There were not too many like
no,
him.
No, Otto Graham.
Oh.
Well, check his records, you know.
Oh, yeah. But no, there's not enough.
And Jim Brown 2 years later, you know, it's like, whoa.
Well, I just wonder. I wonder if Cleveland has the line to keep poor little Johnny Football from getting, you know, snapped like a twig.
Well, the guy that owns it now, isn't his brother the governor of Tennessee?
Yeah, it's our boy.
How did he get
it? Isn't he connected with some scandals with that truck stop crap he was throwing around?
Darn right. Jim, you asked how did he get that name?
Mm-hmm.
His name's Johnny Manziel. He is the son of a millionaire. He went to Texas A&M, and you know all that goes with that.
Yeah.
And he played what was arguably a brilliant freshman year, and somebody tagged him as, you know, he was just Johnny Football because he was well, I mean, he was the sun and the moon and the stars. And then along the way, he got popped for selling, what, autographs?
Yep.
Only it was sort of covered up and brushed aside. And that was when the reporter at Fox Sports wrote the column saying that he was the new Rosa Parks.
Oh, please.
Yeah,
by the way,
and as an aside, for those who don't follow the game, Johnny Manziel is white, but he's the new Rosa Parks because he was demanding his freedom to sell $10,000 autographs and something.
Well, shit, if anybody's stupid enough to buy them, why can't you sell them?
Well, unfortunately, there are still things such as the law, and there's a lot of limits on college football players. I did post an article in the Skype chat on Johnny Manziel. I did a Google search, and this one from an outfit called Deadspin is interesting. But I'll quote from it. The article, by the way, from Deadspin is called The Long Con, How the Manziels Conquered America. The second paragraph is pretty damning. But maybe it isn't so weird. It turns out the Manziels are much more colorful and interesting, much than any of the profiles thus far have indicated. Their fortune was indeed made in oil canning specifically, but there were also family sidelines and cockfighting, small-time grifting, match-fixing, if you believe the federal indictments, cocaine trafficking, and murder.
Oh, fact, first, that crowd, okay.
Yeah, the first great sporting success under the family name wasn't Johnny Football. It was the Manziel Gray Game Ball, bred by Johnny's great-grandfather. The Manziels arrived in Texas after cockfighting was outlawed, but they wound up with a breed named after them anyway.
They weren't a cockfighting, too?
According to this article,
his
great-grandfather, Joseph Manziel, in the Mount Lebanon, was born in the Mount Lebanon region of Syria, got to the U.S. I'll post it in the horn chat, but why do I get the feeling this is someone who is waiting for a very long and hard fall from grace?
I don't know, but I'll be glad to sell anybody my autograph. All you have to do is give me your fax number, and in turn, wait a minute, I'll get your fax number, and you can give me your credit card.
Yeah, you got to get the hustle all squared away before you put it out there for the first time, Jim.
Sorry about that. Yeah. I haven't been selling myself for such a long time. I forgot how, Bob.
You don't have a website?
Sick Transit Gloria Mundi, Jim.
I am insulted.
I can tell.
You need a website to grift fax numbers or so yesterday.
Oh, yeah, fax numbers are for Nigerian widows.
Oh, well, I was going to put an 8x10 glossy with it, too. That's the real kicker in this thing. Like I said.
You mean those guys that are holding money for me?
Hey, yeah, those.
Oh, boy. Them nice guys offer me all that money, I'll tell you. I know I'm dumber than a box of rocks, but I can't buy that crap, you know.
I'm guessing, Bill, you've never sat down at just two awfully many three-card Monty games expecting to walk away a big winner.
Hell, they were running those on buses in Cleveland when I was a kid.
Have you ever seen
back in the bus?
Has anybody ever seen the movie The Loved One?
Oh, gosh, yeah, and I read the book.
Remember that guy who was the... who was giving Miss Thanatogenes or whatever her name was all this advice, and he was some old drunk in a bar, and he was writing her all these letters.
Oh, God, yeah. And for those who have, Evelyn Waugh.
Oh, that's a movie you got to see. Robert Morris, Jonathan Winters, and let's see, who else was in that damn? Oh, yeah. And then they were, you know, that's when they were going to shoot all these coffins into space to clear this graveyard up. And they had the Air Force in there on procurement. And they had all these coffins laid out with all these beautiful women. Except for one coffin, guess who was in it? Liberace.
That's right.
I mean, it was an equal opportunity adventure.
Yeah, what a cast. I mean, listen to this. Robert Morse, Jonathan Winters, Anjanette Comer, I'm sorry, Dana Andrews, Milton Berle, James Coburn, John Gielgud, Tab Hunter, Liberace, Roddy McDowell.
Yes.
Yes. Lionel Stander.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And Bob, don't forget Rod Steiger as Mr. Joy Boy.
Oh, that's true.
And he was saving up all his money to get Mom that big tub. I'm sorry, gentlemen. I didn't mean to take everything.
No, that's okay. The blessed Reverend Glenn Worthy.
Jim, a good laugh is always appreciated.
You know what? I'm going to find that this weekend. And
I wish you lived next door because I've got it right here.
Oh, golly Moses, that's
beautiful. But I tell you, that thing, Lord in heaven, when I first saw that and it started out, you know, oh, beautiful for spacious skies and all this stuff, and Robert Morse comes to America. Anyway, I'm sorry. That's a good film. That's a real good film. It was on Late Night not too long ago, actually.
What's the name of it?
The Loved One.
It is amazing, Sparky. The Loved One.
The Loved One. It's been out for a long, long time, and
An absolute tour de force by Jonathan Winters.
Oh yeah, because he plays two people: the Blessed Reverend, who runs this big graveyard thing, just a big shill, and then his poor relation, and they end up, but they're going to shoot people into space and all this stuff after they die. But I mean, it's just a great parody on the American way of death and stuff like that. But and it attacks most every convention possible, from the U.S. Air Force on down.
And it's all centered on the funeral industry, and oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, it is indeed.
Well, hey, we have run out of time. Thank you, one and all. Thank you to Thomas for jumping into the fundraising fray. That took us to only $100 to go for the evening. Thank you very much, one and all. Got to get out of here. Thank you to the phone crew.
Well, thanks for the laugh.
Oh, it was a hoot. I needed it to be a little bit funny this evening.
It was fun. And if you want to celebrate Bob's recovery, please donate to the horn.
Hey.
I had to do that.
I won't say that, but you can say that, Will. Thank you to the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, which will be continuing the chatting into the wee hours of the morning. I know this for a fact. Again, you can send a contact request to Sparky Dunk for the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Everybody have a wonderful weekend. It is time to get out of here. I'm going to try to relax. Maybe I'll get nobody's going to be coming to you know, draw a quart of blood out of my arm this evening. So maybe indeed. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox and Ben Birch. Ben Birch over at WhiteRoseSociety.org, of course. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all. Rick Smith is next on the Horn.